to the 198th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thank you for listening. Today, I have an interview with Ocean Robbins. He has a new book out called The 31-Day Food Revolution, Heal Your Body, Feel Great, and Transform Your World. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. Again, I want to remind everybody to get on over to drdelaney.com, drdelaney.com, to get your tickets for the 4th annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. It's on March 30th here in Punta Gorda at Twin Isles Country Club. We have Alan Goldhammer as a keynote speaker, as well as the motivational speaker Eric O'Gray with his book, Walking with Petey. So it's going to be a great day. Also be giving a talk, as well as Addie the day before. Addie and I are available for private consultations. These are running out, so if you'd like to come in a day early and have a private consultation with either one of us, please get online. You can get your tickets there. It's going to be a great day. Again, a room full of plant-positive people. It's a small enough setting, however, that you can get your questions answered. We're having a Q&A session at the end. There'll be a fabulous plant-based breakfast and lunch. So it's a really great day. Looking forward to it. Again, get your tickets soon. It is a smallish venue, about 200 people max. So get your tickets so that you can join us, and I look forward to meeting you. As most of you know, I'm an endurance athlete. Next run-up is Thrill in the Hills, February 16th. And so I'm in my taper. I did my last long run last weekend, so I just did 13 miles today. I have a bit of a running streak going, which is a little bit unusual for me because I usually try to swim, bike, and run and get a little bit of everything in. But since we've had so many running events here before Christmas and then leading up through April this year, I've been just running, and I had 17-day streak before Christmas and then took Christmas off, and I've been going strong ever since. So I've got a 55-day streak going minus one day, so that's pretty good for me. I'm starting to actually see the benefits of logging day after day in. A lot of these runs have been very easy. I'm not much for speed. This is going to be a trail run. So it's a matter of logging time on my feet, do a few pickups now and then. I usually start my day off with the dog, so we may or may not do a couple miles really slow and then pick it up depending on how they feel and how I feel. But it's been interesting because I've developed a little bit of a more of a running habit. I haven't gotten bored with running this streak and actually look forward to it. The minimum I'll do in a day is about 2.5, and the max, you know, is up to my long runs. Most of the time during the week, I've been doing 5 or 6 miles, and feeling pretty good. You know, have a little issues with, I have to watch my psoas as well, low back. So I'm doing a lot of mobility to try to keep those things going, and I'm ready for taper. But, you know, I'm hanging in there, and I think I'll be ready for the start line and feel good. As far as backyard gardening, there's not much going on. We've had a little bit of a cold spell, but I have lots of tomatoes and Thai chili peppers and jalapeno peppers and herb garden with cilantro and basil and thyme and oregano. So those things are going on. The tower garden's still producing plenty of eggplants, so that's fun. A lot of collards going on in the yard. And the other day I had lunch. It was kind of, I kind of giggled, farm-to-table lunch. I went outside and harvested a couple collard greens, harvested a couple of Chinese eggplants, came in and threw them in the skillet with some garlic. I also had a big portobello mushroom and sauteed that all up, and that was a great lunch. Put a little bit of fresh salsa on that with tomatoes from the garden. So had my own little farm-to-table lunch, and that was really good. Before we jump into the interview with Ocean, just wanted to give you a little bit of his background. He is the CEO and co-founder of the Food Revolution Network. Again, you know, his grandfather was the Robbins of Baskins and Robbins. His dad is known for Diet for a New America. But Ocean has been very active for an early age. At the age of 16, he helped found the Visionary Young Leaders Build a New World organization. He's co-authored Voices of the Food Revolution, Choices for Our Future and the Power of Partnership. He is a motivational speaker. He's the winner of the National Jefferson Award for Outstanding Public Service, the Freedom Flame Award, the Harmon Wilkinson's Award for Outstanding Contribution to the Social Sciences. So I can go on and on about Ocean and all his work, but I think you'll love hearing them straight, hearing the information straight from Ocean, and he's a pleasure to speak with. It is my great pleasure to welcome Mr. Ocean Roberts to the podcast today. I have been a fan of his father's for many years. He's the reason why I became vegan and subsequently plant-based. And I started listening to Ocean and his father on the food summits that they have. And I got to tell you, Ocean, your voice is so kind that I think anybody that listens to these will become plant-based immediately, not only for the education, but just for the kindness that you and your father exude on these podcasts. So welcome, Ocean.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be with you. And really, kindness is kind of what it's all about for me. We live in a world that is so stressed out. So many people are fighting like it's a dog-eat-dog world. And I'm trying to say, you know what, that's not good for your health. Like when you're in a state of reactivity and fight or flight all day long, you end up having a compromised immune system, a compromised mental health, and you're more likely to put pounds on where you don't want them. And so food, which is my focus, can be an opportunity to really stand for the health, the beauty, the joy, the love, the vitality that you want. When you bring your food choices into alignment with what you really want for your life, your whole world gets brighter, and yes, it also gets kinder.
Well, I thank you for the copy of the 31-Day Food Revolution book. It was excellent. You know, you're, again, right there in your father's footsteps. This book was, you know, a new, you know, it wasn't a replacement. It was additive for some of the books that your father has written. And, you know, I really like how you you involve people as they read the book with these challenges. So first thing I wanted to ask you, though, you know, I know your dad's history. You know, it was the Baskin and Robbins empire that he turned away from to look for a healthier road, so to speak. And I know that in my stalking of you, that you've been an activist almost your whole life. But how did it, you know, what was the little conversation about, hey, we're going to team up here as father and son? How did that all start out?
Well, so as you know, my grandpa founded, you know, the world's largest ice cream company, and my dad walked away and moved with my mom to a little island off the coast of Canada where they built a one-room log cabin and grew most of their own food and practiced yoga and meditation for several hours a day. And of course, they named their kid Ocean. That would be me. And then years later, my dad's best-selling books inspired millions of people. And initially, as his books were getting out into the world, I was just so proud of him and so grateful that this message was touching so many lives. And I founded a nonprofit when I was 16 to empower my generation to take a stand for a healthier future. And we spoke to school assemblies, reaching more than 600,000 students. And we also organized leadership events all over the planet. And I spent 20 years directing that nonprofit, working with leaders in over 65 countries. And as I traveled the globe, I saw that the United States was exporting a way of growing food and processing food and eating food with companies like Monsanto and Syngenta and our pesticides spreading, and with companies like KFC and McDonald's and Baskin Robbins spreading around the globe. And I saw that as this spread, waistlines were expanding and hospitals were filling up and people were getting sick. And I realized that, you know, as an American, I felt a sense of responsibility to speak up, because you know what? We know where this path leads. I mean, our country has an obesity and overweight rate that's now over 2/3 of the population. A third of our kids are expected to get diabetes in our lifetime. And you know, as a cardiologist, that for all that we know, heart disease is still the number one killer in the country. And the reality is we can do so much better, because all of this can be turned around with healthier food. So after 20 years working with young leaders around the world, I realized, you know what, I want to focus on food directly. So I launched Food Revolution Network with my dad in 2012 to see if we could kind of help the message of healthy, ethical, and sustainable food reach the masses and use online tools to do so. And we've been pretty successful. We've reached more than 1 million people in our Food Revolution summits. And yet, to be honest, I still felt like we were just getting started. And I wrote 31 Day Food Revolution to take the next step in this movement, because our summits are available for a week every year, but the book is available every day of the year. And also, I want to focus on action, because what I see is that if all that was needed was for us to eat more vegetables and less processed junk, all that was needed was for us to know that we needed to do that, then we wouldn't have an obesity crisis right now. But the reality is that there's a big difference between knowing what to do and doing what you know. And a lot of people get stuck there. So I wrote this book because I wanted to bridge that gap. So every single one of the 31 chapters ends with action steps you can take to apply all that you're learning.
Yeah, I and they're very pointed action steps that anybody can start. So whether you're a beginner or you're wanting to really hone in on your plant-based nutrition, there's a step for you. So I think it takes everybody, it's, you know, no matter where you are in the stage of this, it gives people a challenge to do just a little bit better. You know, I appreciate your honesty in the book. There's a couple of things that made me chuckle. One was about, you know, your honesty about you becoming more aware with your little potato chip fetish, you know. And, you know, your kids, you know, trying to, you know, to look healthier. Nothing like kids to keep you honest, right?
Exactly. Yeah, well, I'll tell the story now if you like.
Sure.
So when we have identical twin sons, and when they were about 10, my son Bodhi and I were having a lot of fights about potato chips. I'd, you know, give him 5 and he'd grab into the bag and take as big a handful as he could. And sometimes he'd find the bag and sneak off into his room and lock the door. And I started thinking, you know, we better hide the potato chips so he can't just grab them whenever he wants to. So I was putting them in funny places, and he would spend large amounts of time scouring the house. And one day he had a particularly happy look on his face as he ran off with a bag he'd found under my bed and locked himself in his room and proceeded to eat the whole bag. So, and every time we went shopping, we were having fights over it, because aisle 4 is where the potato chips were. And he always wanted to start the shopping trip off in aisle 4. And then once he had his bag of potato chips to munch in the store, he would be fine going on being cooperative. But if I didn't give him a bag of potato chips at the outset, we'd have a big conflict. And more than once, we had a lot of uncomfortable-looking fellow shoppers staring at us disapprovingly as he's melting down in the middle of the store. So long story short, one day I went to my wife and I said, "What do you think we should do? We're having all this conflict." She said, "I think you should stop buying potato chips." And I said, "Wait, that means I have to stop eating them." She's like, "Yep." So that's what we did. And amazingly, it didn't take long before we stopped having any conflict. And now we can go to the grocery store and Bodhi doesn't even ask to visit aisle 4 because he's so out of the habit. So it just sometimes takes a look at what we're actually doing. And the best way to not eat unhealthy foods is to actually not buy them in the first place.
Yeah, when they're not in the house, it's certainly a lot easier to avoid them. And, you know, I mean, and it doesn't take, you know, they really mean it. It just takes one to get you back, you know, in swing that you kind of need them, so to speak, you know.
Yes.
And so while we're on the kids subject, you know, you have, you know, you talk about families and shopping, and, you know, a lot of times people think that eating plant-based is going to be a lot more expensive. And you give some really good tips as far as, you know, creating a shopping list, knowing what you're after, and, you know, not just going in wild on shopping sprees. And it can really be very economical to be plant-based.
Oh, it's so true. You know, if you want to, a lot of people are worried about the cost of healthy food. And it's true, you know, that Whole Foods has gotten the unfortunate nickname Whole Paycheck, because it can cost more to eat organically grown foods. And a lot of what's mass produced and therefore the cheapest and the most widespread is junk foods. But it doesn't have to be that way. That the number one way, if you're trying to save money and eat healthy, the first step to take is to not buy foods you don't eat or don't need to eat or shouldn't be eating by cutting down on excess calories. And so cutting out food waste is one big step, but also you know, cutting down on excessive eating. When you eat healthy foods and you get the nutrients that you need, you're less likely to crave foods that aren't in your best interest. The average American gets about 500 or 600 calories more than would be optimal for them. So that's a great way to save some money, is by reining in food addiction, by fundamentally basing your diet around loving foods that love you back instead of loving foods that hate you. And so that's one step. And then obviously cutting out food waste. And then you can also base your diet more around whole foods rather than processed foods, because you pay a little premium price for processing. And frankly, a lot of people eat out at restaurants or do takeout. And if you're trying to save money, then preparing food yourself is a good step to take. Of course, it can take some extra time, and it takes some good habits to have that time built into your life. So I love to prepare food on the weekends when I have a little extra space. I often shop and prepare big quantities of things. I'll make a big casserole, big soups, even freeze some containers in the freezer so I've got them when I need them during the week, so that on the stressful, busy times, you just grab and go.
Yeah, I think that's great. I just did a blog post. We were at a race this past weekend, and in the goodie bag they had a kid's perfect bar, you know, which is a nutrition or energy bar, so to speak, and it was 1.3 ounces and 150 calories. And of course, there was a paragraph full of oils and different kinds of sugars in it. And really, you know, you know, those bars, you know, they tend to cost a lot of money, and they don't keep anybody full. And when we start relying on things like that, you know, an apple which weighs twice the amount with less calories would be a much better option. But, you know, we get sucked down those aisle 4 and 5, and that's where the money tends to be.
Yes, it does. And it's true, you know, that the processed food industry is making a lot of money off the status quo, and it's turning some of that money into advertisements that keep us hooked. And as consumers, we are influenced by taxpayer subsidies as well. And this is something that a lot of people do not realize. But we have a farm bill in the United States where actually the federal government subsidizes with tens of billions of dollars in taxpayer money the so-called commodities crops. I'm talking corn, soy, canola, wheat. And what this turns into is it makes high fructose corn syrup and white flour and processed junk cheaper. Twinkies has 14 subsidized ingredients. And one thing we're not subsidizing is broccoli, nuts and seeds, legumes, the very foods we know we should be eating more of. So in the marketplace, we're actually creating a competitive disadvantage for healthy foods. It's kind of like you're being fined for wearing your seatbelt. If you want to do the right thing, you've got to pay extra. And that's all courtesy of the U.S. taxpayer. So, you know, as a citizen, I find this disturbing. It's not where I want to see my taxpayer money going. And it's not just the United States. Among the developed nations of the world, this is normal. And we're talking an average of about 25 to 30% of the total net price of a lot of our commodities crops in 30 countries around the world, 30 developed countries around the world that were studied, is actually being paid for by the taxpayer.
Yeah, and then by eating those foods, it comes around and nobody takes into the cost of health care that eating these foods is actually contributing to. So if people are eating the salty sugar things and the diabetes and the blood pressure, then it's, you know, adds up to the medications that people are going to get, increased doctor's visits. You know, I was just thinking, you know, kids are, you know, especially when school starts or in the wintertime months when, you know, everybody has a runny nose and everybody's sick. And how can these children be expected to have any kind of immune systems at all if we're feeding these processed foods that have no, you know, virtually no fiber, but no antioxidants and no nutrients. And then we just have a sick population. They miss school. And it just, you know, it's just a vicious cycle. And it all comes back to the food.
Well, it does. And, you know, in the United States, 19% of our gross national product goes to disease symptom management. We call it healthcare, but you know and I know that it isn't about caring for health. It's about managing the symptoms of disease. Most of that is going to treat so-called chronic illnesses like heart disease and cancer and type 2 diabetes and dementia and other illnesses that do not have an end in sight. It's not like you broke a bone and then you fix it. It's a chronic illness that you may live or die with, and for the long term. And so the reality is 19% of GDP, we're talking trillions and trillions of dollars. And what could we gain if we converted savings out of that by eating healthier so we didn't need that medical treatment in the first place? The actual potential is unbelievable. We could transform our economy. We could have not just a healthier population, but a more economically thriving population. If we were able to save some of that money, companies wouldn't be crippled by their healthcare budgets. Neither would governments or economies. And the leading cause of bankruptcy in America is healthcare. So I think that the impact of a food revolution is profound. We can have healthier, more vibrant lives, and we can have a healthier society.
You have a nice section in the book that explains, it talks organic, GMOs, and it can be very confusing to people about what to buy, what not to buy. And, you know, I like the table as far as your Dirty Dozen, but then the ones that you don't have to. But, you know, Ocean, you're the expert on this. When something says organic, are all organics created equal, or do we have to watch where the organic items are purchased from?
Well, organically grown foods are regulated. And in the United States, we have a USDA organic certification program, which has some real substance to it. And thankfully, it really does mean something. So when you see a USDA organic logo, you can know that the item in question was grown without the use of synthetic pesticides, without the use of synthetic fertilizers, without that it wasn't irradiated. If it's meat products, that they don't have hormones or antibiotics in them, and that the animals were fed an organically grown feedstuffs. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's healthy for you. There are organic donuts in my local Whole Foods market, and that doesn't make them good for me just because they're organic. I think that organic can be a significant step in a positive direction. And we know that life expectancy for farm workers in California is somewhere in the neighborhood of 49 years, and that they're dying of cancer in droves. And the farm workers are exposed to pesticides on the job on a regular basis. They're kind of like the canaries in the coal mine, in a sense, for the rest of us. If the pesticides are bad for them, they're probably not good for us or our kids or our families either. But again, if you're facing a choice between non-organic kale and organic donuts, go with the kale. There are a lot of studies showing us in no uncertain terms that basing your diet around whole plant foods can be beneficial for health. And most of those studies were done with people who were eating non-organic versions of those foods. So there is little question that eating more plants is good for you, whether they're growing organically or not. But I would say there's a pretty strong likelihood that if you can afford to go in the organic direction, that's going to be a positive step that's, at worst case, an insurance policy, and at best case, a game changer. There are also any number of additives and chemicals that are not permitted in 100% organic food products. So you can avoid a lot of the processed junk, but not all of it. So read labels. If you see chemicals with names you don't know how to pronounce, they're probably not chemicals your body's going to know how to digest properly either. And some of these chemicals were strategically designed to get you to eat more, to want more, to crave more. So they actually fool your body into not knowing when you're full. The result of that is that you end up spending money buying more calories that make you sicker and add a spare tire around the middle. That's not good for anybody. So you have to kind of be your own filter and look out for the bad stuff. And so certainly organic is a wonderful step, but it's not the whole story. Now, as far as whether certain sources of organic are better than others, I mean, yeah, we've got a lot of major big agribusiness getting in on the organic action now. And some of the organically grown products we consume are grown on massive mega farms. And I personally think that small is beautiful when it comes to food. So if you can get food from a local farmer's market or a community supported agriculture program, that's best. Then you're working with real farmers who really have their hands in the dirt, and rather than stuff that's grown by big machines. But at the same time, don't make the perfect into the enemy of the good. You know, if you have time and capacity and it enriches your life to have a relationship with where your food comes from, beautiful. But if you don't, then just do the best you can with what you got.
Sounds great. Yeah, I thought that the statistic that you listed, worldwide 500 million family farmers grow 80% of the world's foods. And I think there was, you know, there's more and more back to take back the victory gardens or the gardens in the backyard. If anybody can just grow a little something, whether it's their herbs or some tomatoes or peppers, it helps in a lot of different ways. And like you say, supporting the local farmers. But I think, you know, if kids can be involved in gardening and they see where some of the foods come from, they're more apt to taste it, more apt to like it, and then to, you know, ultimately question where their food comes from.
Absolutely. It's true. You know, there's actually a lot of studies showing that when children grow vegetables, they're more likely to eat them. And so one of the best ways, and that's not just kids, by the way, one of the best ways to encourage your family to eat more vegetables and fruits for that matter is to plant some. And the simple act of growing food, even if it's a little plant in a little pot inside the house, gives the whole family a sense of connection to where that food comes from and where food comes from and what it means. You know, we have turned food into a commodity, but at the end of the day, it's also a community. It's a web of relationships. And your food is intimately connected to the sun and the soil and the rain. It's connected to farmers and farm workers. It's connected to bugs and ecosystems and earthworms and compost and fertilizer, the manure and the compost that actually made the soil that grew the foods that you eat. And when we actually take a chance to harvest the totality of what food is, then our lives take on a richness and a depth and a meaning and a perspective that is so much more than X dollars per pound. It's so much more than a certain nutrient profile. It's actually a connection. You know, with people that you love, you actually learn that they're more than just, you know, a certain body type or shape or size or form or age. There's a being there. And I think that there is a way that we can come to have a relationship with food that's more intimate than just a thing to shove down the hatch. And when we do that, our lives get richer and more beautiful. And that's what I'm all about. I want to have more pleasure. I want to have more joy. I want to have more aliveness and meaning in my life. And I want food to be an opportunity to experience that.
Yeah, I think that's great. You know, we have a little backyard, some raised beds, and a tower garden. And every day I go home for lunch and play some frisbee with the dog and check on the plants. And my mom will come outside and, you know, it's like, hey, did you see we have some more peppers, or, you know, we have more ripe tomatoes, or this is coming up or that's coming up. And it's or it's exciting. Well, we have more eggplant, you know, and in going out in the backyard on Sundays and, you know, doing the gardening, you know, a little bit more of that is just such a peaceful, relaxing way to spend the afternoon that, you know, and I share it on the podcast because, and sometimes it's, you know, I think, oh, this is kind of cheesy, but people actually write in and it's like, you know, I'm really glad to hear about what's going on in the garden because we live in Florida and it's a different growing season than, you know, up north or in California. So it's nice to be able to share what I'm seeing in my backyard with other people with what they're seeing in their backyard.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, one thing I love is that as we stand for healthier food for ourselves and our lives, we're also contributing to a healthier food system and a healthier planet. And I know you're aware of this as well. And it's so powerful that the same food choices that are going to help you fight cancer and heart disease and type 2 diabetes and dementia are the very same food choices that are going to contribute to a more ethical and a more sustainable future for life on Earth, because it's all connected. And the core of that is eating less processed junk and also eating lower on the food chain, eating less factory farmed animal products and more whole plant foods. When we make those choices, we are contributing to a more ethical and a more beautiful world, a world in which farmers are treated more respectfully, a world in which our topsoil and our water supplies are cared for and cherished for future generations, and a world in which our climate is more stable.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I saw where you're donating a portion of the book's proceeds for Trees for the Future. to plant trees, either nut trees or fruit trees in low-income communities for people to share.
Yeah, every single copy of my book, 31 Day Food Revolution, that anybody buys, every new copy, I'm donating to cover the cost of an organic food or nut tree in a low-income community. And that's also true in Food Revolution Network with every single product we ever sell in our entire company, that we make that commitment. And it's just a way for us to keep building the food revolution to the communities that need it the most. Because right now in the world, as we sit, there is a tremendous gap in access to healthy food. And a lot of the people who are the poorest are also suffering the most from not just starvation, but also obesity, and are deprived, if not of calories, then of critical nutrients. And so I want to help spread the food revolution so that everybody, regardless of the color of their skin or how much money they have in the bank, has access to real, whole, healthy food for themselves and their families. And planting organic fruit and nut trees is one of the ways we can help that happen.
Yeah, I was. We were just in Sacramento, and around the Capitol, it's so pretty. The gardens there in the park, you know, they have all the orange trees, and I think it's such a great idea. It's funny, when I saw that, you know, they're planting the nut and fruit trees, there was a Facebook share a way back, and it got so much negative feedback for, you know, how, well, wonder if people don't eat it, or wonder if it's going to cause all kinds of, you know, animals to get, you know, come to people, you know, come into the cities because of the excess fruit. And I think that's so off the mark. I think it's such a great opportunity. Again, you know, I'll take it back to when I was little and I used to go berry picking with my grandmother, and we used to go get, and it was wild. They were wild strawberries, wild blackberries, wild raspberries, and we would bring them home. And, you know, unfortunately back then we would make them into a pie, but, you know, but it was the idea and the memories that you get by getting, you know, actually harvesting your own fruit and having that opportunity. And again, it brings the health back to, you know, what you're actually eating, as opposed to just stuffing calories or just getting enough calories to sustain you. And, you know, I noticed in Sacramento, there's a lot of community gardens around different cities that we go to run. Asheville, there are a lot of community gardens. Here in Florida, Punta Gorda, they're starting some community gardens. So I think that's, you know, it's, again, a great sense of community that can bring the people together just to start these little plots. And, you know, when you're driving down the road, if you see an empty lot, it's like, it would be nice if people could do a community garden in those areas.
Well, it would. And community gardening, it brings the community together and it grows healthy food. And I think one of the untold success stories of our times is in the city of Detroit, which has been economically ravaged in the last couple of generations. As of 10 years ago, the median home price in Detroit was about $25,000. And yet what's happened is that there's a lot of vacant lots in the city, as people have left the inner city of Detroit. And what's happened is that people started growing food in those lots. And so despite the fact, or perhaps even because of the fact, that unemployment got out of hand, and because there were all these vacant lots, people started growing community gardens, and Detroit became the community garden capital of the United States. There are more than 1,000 community gardens within the city limits of Detroit. And this is just one example of how people can respond resourcefully and resiliently to crisis. I think it's incredibly inspirational. I think that one of the most powerful things anyone can do who wants to revitalize inner cities and uplift the health of low-income communities is to get some gardens growing.
Yeah, I think that was great. So, what's your favorite family meal?
Oh my goodness, there are so many. How do I even get started? So I'll tell you about breakfast,
okay. Because
that's a place where a lot of people struggle, actually. I don't know about you, but for me, when my day is getting going, the last thing I want to do is spend a bunch of time in the kitchen. I kind of want to get going and get off to work, and I've got tons of stuff to do. So it can be stressful sometimes. But what I've learned to do is to plan ahead the night before. So every night or sometimes my wife helps me out with this too. We pack up breakfast, sometimes even lunch, for the next day, the night before, in containers in the fridge, and then it's just kind of grab and go time in the morning. But I want them to be good. So I've got a few breakfast favorites. Let me say first off that sometimes I hope you don't hate me for this, but I kind of cheat and I eat leftovers from dinner. And sometimes dinner was really good. And I don't have a real problem with that. I don't think that there's any reason why breakfast should necessarily be set off in some distinct category. If dinner was fabulous, why not enjoy some quinoa and veggies with some nice curry sauce on top? Why not, right? Yep. But other times I want a more breakfasty breakfast. So one of my favorites is a chia porridge. So I take chia seeds and I soak them overnight in unsweetened soy milk. I might add a dash of maple syrup to it, some vanilla extract, and a bunch of blueberries, maybe some bananas to sweeten it up. And then sometimes add some nutmeg or cinnamon as well. Stir all that up, soak it overnight. The next morning, I've got this wonderful porridge that's saturated in omega-3 fatty acids and protein and wonderful antioxidants and phytonutrients. The blueberries are good for brain health. The chia seeds are good for just about everything. There's lots of protein, and it tastes fabulous. So that's a fun breakfast for me. Other times I'll do an overnight oatmeal soak. There's lots of different options. But the bottom line is, with breakfast, plan ahead so you're not left scrambling for some out-of-the-box cereal or, you know, spending a lot of time in the kitchen when you really want to get on with your day.
That sounds great. I think I'm going to have to do that because that sounds really, really good. Or even, you know, you could make that could be a nice dessert as well.
Yeah, absolutely, it could be. And, you know, interestingly, desserts, we can broaden our horizons around dessert too. One of my favorite family desserts is fruit. Sometimes we'll put some, we have a Vitamix, even a blender can work. Just blend up a little bit of soy milk or nut milk or coconut milk with some frozen bananas and then add in some berries. Or just go with the bananas and then add a little bit of nutmeg or cinnamon. Or allspice to the mix, along with some vanilla, you can make a really lovely, somewhat creamy frozen dessert, have it ready in about 3 minutes or 5 minutes, and the whole family can sit down and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites. I have to say that we kind of rotate around. We have a lot of mangoes in Florida, so we stored a lot frozen, chopped them up, put them in bags, and so we do a mango pineapple type sorbet type dessert, or some night it might be cherry, cacao, banana, you know. So I agree with you that those desserts are better than any desserts that, you know, that take a lot of time and have a lot of excess of calories that can make. And I look at it as it's hydrating and you're getting a lot of antioxidants and phytonutrients. So why not?
You know, people are afraid of fruit because it's sweet, and we've learned that sweet things are bad for us. But fruit, actually, and berries as well, which are a kind of fruit technically, is rich in so many antioxidants and phytonutrients and fiber that it actually is really good for you for the most part. Now, if you're seriously struggling with diabetes, then definitely pay attention to blood sugar levels and see what works for you. But most studies are finding that because you have to chew it and because it comes with so many nutrients and it's a whole food, fruits, you can eat an abundance of fruit and it's not going to drive your blood sugar haywire. And it's going to be really beneficial in terms of all kinds of disease prevention and vitality enhancement. So fruit up, I say.
Fabulous. Well, I hope that, and I'm sure that it will be, because I know a lot of people listen to the summit, and the Food Revolution book is just going to, again, let somebody have this in their hand to be able to participate. And, you know, I encourage everybody to read the book, take the quizzes, and, you know, kind of keep score to what you can do. There's I think J. Morris Hicks was on the podcast once, and he has a four-leaf survey that he has people take to see where they are on their plant, how plant strong they are as compared to the future. But I think you could use your questions at the end of the book or your challenges to actually see how plant strong that you are and ways that you can actually make it better. And not only just the food, but, you know, I also like, you know, as far as community, how you can build your community around wholesome plant foods.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I wrote 31 Day Food Revolution to help you put it all into action. And it's actually, there are four parts to the book. And I think this is kind of important because part one is detoxify. It's about getting rid of the bad stuff. Part two is nourish. It's about saying yes to the really, really good stuff that helps you thrive. part three is gather. It's about the social side of food. You know, we're not just lone wolves. We're social beings, and food is very social. So I show how you can build the support system and the network and the web of relationships that will help you to be lifted up when you need the help, that will help you stay on your path, and that will also help you be a positive influence on loved ones who may not eat the same way that you do. And then part four is transform. We look at how you can change the world with your knife and fork, how you can bring your food choices into alignment with your values and realize that as a food revolutionary, you're actually helping build a more healthy, ethical, sustainable world for everyone who eats. And I show you exactly how. And the spoiler alert to all of this is it's a whole lot easier to make food choices that are good for you and good for your world than you probably ever imagined. So I put it all together into this book, and I kind of walk you through the journey. There are 31 short chapters, and each chapter ends with action steps. And people ask, why 31? And I'll say very simply, because 31 steps to health can give you more pleasure and more satisfaction, even than 31 flavors of ice cream.
I'm so slow. I did not catch that part. I just thought one day extra would always be good. I'm going to actually implement the food buddy system into our membership practice, because I have people that are new to plant-based nutrition, and I think that would be very beneficial to have people. You suggested that maybe you don't want to cook every day. Maybe you can say, okay, we have these preferences, and actually share food.
Absolutely. And, you know, if families eat very differently, then you can negotiate. You can find ways to work it out. You know, if you're having tacos, then, you know, put all the ingredients out there and people add what they want to their taco. If you can make a base that's plant-based, then if people want to add some cheese or whatever else on top, because that's not how they eat, they can add it individually. And if you're going to a family gathering, you can also go potluck style, where different people bring different dishes. If you're going to a party where you're not expecting foods to be served that are going to work for you, plan ahead, maybe bring something to share. So you can share the wealth of health and also know you're going to have something that works for you. There are ways to navigate and negotiate all of these dynamics so that you don't have to come off like a Grinch, and you can be friendly and respectful and positive, and so that all of our family gatherings and holidays can be true to what they're really intended to be, which is not a big fest of consumption. It's not all about the food or the presents or the parties or the stuff. It's about the people. It's about the love. It's about the memories we create. It's about the connections and the relationships. So food can actually be a doorway to that when you make it a place where we can celebrate the diversity of everyone. You know, not everyone has to agree. You don't need to shove your ideology down someone's throat, and hopefully they won't do that for you either. But you can respectfully agree to support each other in doing what works for everybody. And that's the best way to be true to the spirit of any kind of family gathering, I think.
Well, Ocean, I really thank you for being on the podcast and sharing your book. And I think that that's a great take-home message, that food maybe should be more of the door than the room. I wish you the best of success, and I'll keep listening and admiring you and your father as you do great work.
Thank you so much. And thanks for your wonderful work, and thanks for having me on. And for everybody listening, you can get 31-Day Food Revolution from your local bookstore. You can get it online. You can go to 31dayfoodrevolution.com. I wrote this book for you and for everyone you love, so put it to use.
All right. Take care.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Ocean Robbins. I certainly did. And again, I enjoyed his book very much, The 31-Day Food Revolution. You can get it on Amazon or your local bookstore, but certainly check it out. Again, if you have any questions for me, you can email me at jamie@drdelaney.com. It's jami@drdelaney.com. Please go and get your tickets to Eventbrite. You can see the link and hear more about the conference at drdelaney.com. Love to see you and meet you and hear from you. And certainly, if you're going to be at Thrill in the Hills, say hi to me. I'm going to be up there running with Addy Delaney Meinert. So look forward to seeing you then. But I'll see you next week, and we'll talk one more time before we head to Thrill in the Hills. Have a good one.